So let me first thank Professor Gifford Vidal and Professor Roger Merkel, Professor Song-Sik Lee for allowing me speaking here. And it's the end of the year, so I appreciate everyone's time and thanks for coming to the talk. I hope I won't disappoint you. So yeah, so the talk is about the theory of a cluster model insider. So this is the outline of the talk. I'll first provide some motivation and introduction to this work. So then I will explain some the theory of cluster model insight as well as experiments in two dimensions. Now I go to three dimensions if I have time. So finally, I summarize the talk. So let me start with a conventional model insider. So let me first consider triangle that is Hamilton model, single band at half fitting. So this is the Hamiltonian. So this would be the expected phase diagram for the single band Hubble model on the triangle lattice. So when the Hubble U interaction is very weak, so the electron just form liquid metal. So when the interaction, the Hubble U is very strong, the electron are localized on every lattice site. And the Hamiltonian is a simple Heisenberg model. So the ground state is noise. This 120 degree magnetic order state, Bragg translation symmetry, Bragg rotation, spin rotation symmetry, etc. So in the intermediate regime, when the Hubble-U interaction is strong to localize the electron, but not strong to induce the magnetic order, so it's believed that you have this this so-called weak model insert U1 quantum spin liquid regime. So the underlying physics is as follows. So in this intermediate regime, because the Hubble U is not very large, so the charge gap is not very large as well. So then the charge fluctuation is strong. So it will induce long range spin exchange as well as some like four-sided ring exchange. So these interactions are competing with a nearest neighbor Heisenberg model and frustrate this magnetic order and eventually kill this magnetic order in this weak motor regime. So such a disordered regime has been supported by many different numerical methods, and many property of this intermediate regime, you know, spin metal or whatever, so are very similar to electron metal, but with very subtle and important difference because of the presence of a fluctuating U1 gauge field. So the low energy effective field theory for this intermediate regime U1 quantum spin liquid is described by a spin-on Fermi surface coupled with a fluctuating U1 gauge field. So this is a strong coupled theory, and so the property of this or the so the understanding of this field theory is very hard. There is no controlled method so far. There are some attempts, but it hasn't been resolved yet.
What is the strongest evidence for the spin liquid phase?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are numerical evidence and experimental evidence. So let me provide the experimental evidence.
No, but because experimentally, probably it's not exactly this model, right, that you're talking about. But let's say if you're talking about the model.
Yeah.
Right, so what is the strongest numerics?
I see. So there are DMRG results on this, you know, some fat ladder. Then also exact dynamization, but it's a small system. So people also look at effective model. Instead of looking at the Hubble model, they look at spin model. So they consider a Heisenberg model plus a ring exchange. So they consider some, you know, nearest neighbor Heisenberg model plus a four-sided ring exchange and they change the parameter and look for whether there is a quantum spin liquid regime appears when you tune some coupling parameters.
Right, but that model is not equivalent
to the coupling. Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there's some DMFT as well.
Yeah, DMFT. Yeah. But DMFT, yeah.
I mean, it's approximate. Not
sure.
Yes.
But I think the exact analyzation on the quantum coupling expansion for the continuous regime see that when you reach about U of T of order 12 or so, mm-hmm. you see a proliferation of singlets in between the singlet and the triplet gap.
Mm-hmm.
You might think that this is really a precursor to this way. You just see all these singlets crashing down.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, every numerical has its own problem. And this is a gapless state, so it's very hard to detect. For gap, it's relatively easier. So far there are three organic compounds. They have been proposed as candidate for triangle lattice Hopf model spin liquid. So these are the first two guys are the old ones. There is a recent new ones. It's discovered this year. And so in this kind of system, so the electron are localized on some kind of molecular dimer. So the electron are shared by these two dimer. So if you view this dimer as a supersite, this supersite they themselves form a triangle lattice. And each side has a spin 1/2 moment. So that's a spin 1/2 triangle lattice. So they did a very careful measurement. At high temperature, you get some Curie Weissler. But at low temperature, the spin sensibility deviates from the Curie Weissler. And in fact, if you look closely, and at zero temperature limit, the spin sensibility becomes a constant. So this is very much like a Pauli-like spin sensibility in Fermi liquid metal. So there are also many, many other measurements besides this thermodynamic measurement. There are transports in these two compounds. So my focus today is not on this kind of material. So let me go back to this first diagram. So it is now in this regime, the presence of, if it is present, this U1 spin liquid, if it exists, it's because of strong charge fluctuation in this weak model regime because charge gap is small. So I want to make a few remarks on the mechanism, physical mechanism for this quantum spin liquid instead of a physical property of this quantum spin liquid. So in fact, there is no sharp distinction between the charge fluctuation in this weak model regime and strong model regime, despite that there are different spin phases. So the second remark is the charge fluctuation being strong in this intermediate regime, in the weak model regime, is only a quantitative description of the charge fluctuation. It's not a qualitative description. So I want to raise the following two questions or two observations.
I don't think it's known, but you can imagine that the double occupancy fraction would have a discontinuous further jump as you move from the strong limit to the.
Yeah, but it's still.
That's quantitative, you would call this quantitative.
It's still quantitative, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I want to raise these two questions or two observations, if you like. So, what if the charge fluctuation is very strong? So, according to this argument, the charge fluctuation, strong charge fluctuation, favor quantum spin liquid. Suppose I make the charge fluctuation being very strong, and in the most extreme case, suppose the charge circuit form a quantum charge liquid, that's a very strongly fluctuating. And according to this argument, the spin sector should be even more likely to be a quantum spin liquid. So this is the first observation based on this understanding of this phase diagram. So the second observation is, what if the charge fluctuation lead to some kind of a structure in the charge sector? You know, spin sector will surely be influenced by this charge structure in a very non-trivial way. And this will lead to a very striking experimental consequence. And if this experimental consequence is being observed in real experiment, they will give us lots of confidence on the theoretical framework we're developing. So these are two questions I'm going to answer or address in this talk. So these two questions has a one physical answer, and which is a cluster model insulator. So cluster model insulator is a new class of model insulator. In cluster model insulators, the electron actually doesn't matter whether the particle are fermionic or bosonic. So the particle are localized on some cluster unit instead of lattice site. And these cluster units build up the lattice. So my goal of this talk is to introduce the notion of cluster model insulator. So these cluster model insulators, they are interesting and they exist in nature. Actually, quite a lot of them. Many organics are cluster model insulators. And they haven't been studied before. So the second goal is...
Like
molecular orbitals.
You mean like these molecules that build the material and the electrons that move around this molecule as a cluster?
Yeah.
That's what you mean.
Yeah. So I want to develop a new theoretical framework to understand the knowledge charge fluctuation and the spin fluctuation in cluster model instead, and apply to illustrate the examples and expand the puzzling experiment. So I'm going to the two-dimension cluster model instead. So I was saying I was talking about striking experiment. What is the striking experiment? So this is the striking experiment discovered by Tara McQueen at Johns Hopkins University in this material, lithium zinc molybdenum oxide. So in this material, it's called a triangle lattice of triangle cluster. So these molybdenum, this green are molybdenum atoms. They first form a triangle cluster. These triangle cluster, if you view this triangle cluster as a supersite, these supersites themselves form a bigger triangle lattice. So in each triangle cluster, there is a one unpaired electron. So this electron is localized in this inside this triangle cluster. They form a lock spin 1/2 moment. So naively, you would think this system is described by triangle lattice spin 1/2 model, because the supersite form a triangle lattice. There is a one spin 1/2 moment here. So surprisingly, they measure the spin sensibility in this material. So at high temperature, you get a well-defined Kelly-Weiss law. So at around 100 Kelvin, they said there is a turning point. The slope of this spin sensibility, inverse spin sensibility versus temperature is changed. So if you look at carefully, the slope of this one is three times of this one. And the slope, well, you know, according to Kelly-Weiss law, the slope is the inverse of the Curie constant. The Curie constant measures the number of active spin moments. So that means the number of active spin moments at low temperature is exactly 1/3 of the high temperature ones. So this is very, very striking. Moreover, the Curie temperature is significantly reduced compared to the high temperature Curie constant. It's about the factor of 10 difference, or one of the magnitude reduced compared to high temperature. So why is it striking and difficult? So if we view the system as a triangle lattice Hesse-Moll model, and in the spin 1/2 and the triangle lattice Hesse-Moll model, the system should order, and there is no such fractional spin sensibility. And if we view the system as a triangle lattice Hopner model at half filling, we also don't have this. We don't have fractional spin sensibility, and spin sensibility should become a constant just like organics. So neither model applies to this system and cannot explain the experiment. So actually, this 1/3 fractional spin sensibility has some, I think it's interesting because it has some similarity with this 1/3 Laughlin state, fractional quantum Hall Laughlin state. Xiaogang is not here. Xiaogang described 1/3 Laughlin state as all the electrons in the Laughlin state are doing some kind of collective dancing under a rule, so that every electron moves three steps along the other electron in the lowest Landau level. So the electron in this material, is there any collective behavior associated with the electron in this material? Actually, there is some similarity, and I will explain the similarity here. So first, let's look at the structure more closely. So in fact, the system is the people say it's a triangle lattice of a triangle cluster. In fact, if we connect them, it's a Kagame lattice. It's not it's a triangle lattice of a triangle cluster, but it's in fact a Kagame lattice. Just these green triangles and the red triangles are of different size. They're slightly different. It's an anisotropic triangle lattice. So that's an important step, in fact. So the claim, my claim is the system should be described by a single band extending the Hopner model on an anisotropic Kagame lattice with 1/6 electron filling. Because for each triangle cluster, each of this solid triangle cluster hosts one unpaired electron. And one electron shared by these three sides. So if you count the spin degeneracy, that's 1/6 electron filling. And the minimum model allowed by symmetry actually is this extended Hopner model. And it's, in fact, it requires some quantum chemistry to obtain this model. And it's very important to how to arrive this model from quantum chemistry. And there's some physical argument beneath it. But for the purpose of this talk, I will not talk about too much about quantum chemistry. So let's just believe this model describes this system. So this model has five different parameters. So the first is so on this solid triangle, so there is a hopping, nearest neighbor hopping between two sides, and there is a nearest neighbor repulsive interaction. If there are two electrons occupy these two sides, then it's a nearest neighbor repulsive interaction. And similarly, on the dashed down triangle, there is a nearest neighbor hopping T2 and nearest neighbor repulsive interaction V2. And besides these four parameters, we have onside Hubbard U interaction. And the physical, so Hubbard U, large Hubbard U cannot localize the electron because the filling is not half filling, it's a fractional filling. So we need a nearest neighbor repulsive interaction V1 V2 to localize the electron. If we only have Hubbard U, the electron can still move around. I mean, Hubbard U just kill double occupancy. It doesn't localize the electron. So V1, V2 are needed. First of all, it's because of molybdenum is a 4D electron. So the wave function is extended. So we need to consider this extended interaction. So this is the generic phase diagram. So I will explain how to obtain this phase diagram. But first, let me explain the property of the property of different phases. So Hubbard U is always large. We said our Hubbard U to be very large. So we don't care Hubbard U. This Hubbard U doesn't enter into this Hubbard phase diagram. So suppose the interaction, both interactions are very weak. So the hopping term dominate. So the system in a Fermi liquid. So interactions are very small. Now suppose we increase the interaction V1. V1 is the interaction on the solid triangle. So if we increase the interaction V1, but keep the V2 to be small, if we go along this direction. So the electron, the interaction on the up triangle is very strong. So it localizes the electron on the up triangle. So the electron number on the up triangle is fixed to be one. But the electron number on the down triangle is still fluctuating because the V2 is small. It doesn't cost too much energy to place two electrons on a down triangle because it doesn't cost too much energy. V2 is very small. So in this regime, so I call it a type 1 cluster model insert up. So electrons are localized on the up triangle. The electron number on the up triangle are fixed. So that's the insert instead. So similarly, if I increase V2 but keep a V1 small, so the electron will localize on the down triangle. So this type one down. So suppose if I increase both V1 and V2, make both of them large, so then the electron should be localized on both up and down triangles. The electron number on the both up and both down triangle will be fixed to be one. So a simple understanding is electrons are localized in one type of triangle in a type one class model instead, and electrons are localized in both type of triangle in a type two class model instead. So what is the type 2 cluster model instead? So electrons are localized on both up and down triangles. So electron number are fixed to be 1 on both up and down triangles. So but electron position are not frozen. So this is a snapshot of electron configuration on this David Star shape. So there are three electrons. They should be away from each other. If this electron is here, this triangle is not happy. So electron can still doing some collecting move. There's this quantum mechanical process is allowed. So suppose this electron moves to here. So then this triangle is not going to be happy because there are two electrons here. So then this electron must escape to somewhere else to avoid this electron. So if this electron moves here, and this triangle is not going to be happy because there are repulsive interaction here. So then this electron must escape. The only way to escape is to this side because this side is already moved away. So this is some kind of third order process in type 2 cluster model inside. So this is some kind of resonant process. So this thing can be mapped into a dimer resonant. If you map this occupied electron side to a colored link, to a dimer link connected in the center of two nearby triangles, So this configuration, this electron configuration mapped to this dimer configuration, and this electron configuration mapped to this this dimer configuration. So this third order process is called is a dimer resonant process. So the correlated electron motion on the type 2 cluster model insulator is mapped to a dimer resonating on a dual Hanekamp lattice. If we connect the center, if we connect the center of each triangle, they will form a Hanekamp lattice. It's a dual Hanekamp lattice. So the low energy or the effective model is a quantum dipole model on a dual Hanekamp lattice. So this is the charge sector low energy Hamiltonian in a type 2 cluster model insulator. So in fact, it's well known that the quantum dipole model on a bipartite lattice can be mapped into a compact U1 gauge theory, like on a Hanekamp lattice. I mean, Fred King and Kiverson, they did it on the square lattice, so which is bipartite. So this is the Hanekamp lattice. It's not very different. So because of there is an underlying gauge structure in the charge sector already. So if we want to study the approximate phases of the type 2 cluster model instead, if we view the type 2 cluster model as the parameter state and try to obtain the nearby phases from the type 2 cluster model insulator, so we need to invent a new Parton gauge construction to describe the phase transition. So originally for conventional model insulator, we have this kind of slit rotor construction. We decompose the electron into its charge part and it's a spin part. The spin part carry fermionic statistics, and the charge part carry electron charge. So that's the original slip rotor construction. It works for the conventional model inside the spinner grid. And the internal gauge structure is a U1. I add a subscript SP, means a spin-on. Okay, it's a U1 spin-on gauge. Then the U1 gauge structure because of this gauge redundancy. So. For the cluster model insulator, the Parton gauge construction need to take into account the fact that we have an additional gauge structure in the charge sector. So we need to, in addition to write down the electron into a charge rotor times the fermionic spin-on, we need to further decompose the charge ions into two parts. Because adding a charge here violated the localization condition on both up and down triangles. That's like adding a gauge charge onto the upper down triangle. So we need to decompose the electron into this kind of thing. So we decompose the electron into, we fractionize the electron into three parts, one fermionic spin-on and two charge ions. So this is a new type of Parton construction to capture the two U1 gauge structures in the theory. There is a U1 gauge structure in the charge sector and a U1 gauge structure which causing the spin charge separation. So now I want to make a digression to, I want to make a small digression. So there are, as pointed out by Song-Sik Lee to me, so there are two classes of Parton gauge construction, two Parton gauge theories in quantum magnetism. So the first type of Parton gauge construction was introduced by the fermions. The slit fermions is introduced by Ian Affleck, and then is a fermionic, then is a bosonic spin-on introduced by Sibir Sachdev, and also this slit rotor construction. So this kind of Parton gauge construction are often blamed to be unjustified, and it's often hard to develop a physical intuition and to cut the spin into two pieces and glue them back by gauge field. So it's very hard to develop some intuition, but it works sometimes. So there is actually the second class of Parton gauge constructions. So in this kind of Parton gauge the second type of Parton gauge construction applied to the cases where the microscopic model at low energies or at the intermediate energies already looks like a gauge theory. For instance, in my case, this charge sector quantum dipole model is already like a U1 compact U1 gauge theory on the Hanekamp lattice. So also the toric quantum model is like a gauge theory already in the square lattice. So this kind of The second type of pattern gas construction was developed by Oleg Chernyshev on the Kagame lattice, Z2 spin liquid, and Leon Balance on this quantum spin ice system. So the pattern construction I used here is a combination of these two type of pattern gas construction. So I use in the charge cycle, I use this type of pattern gas construction. So that's the formalism. I mean, I write the microscopic harmonic can be translated into this lattice gauge theory, and it can be decoupled into a charge circuit, a spin-on circuit, and a gauge circuit, and can be solved subconsistently. And then how do we obtain the phase diagram from these mean field solutions? So in a Fermi liquid metal, the electron number on both upper and down triangle are strongly fluctuating. So that means the charge boson living on the upper and down triangle are condensed because the charge number are strongly fluctuating. So the both of them are condensed. So the U1 gauge field in the charge sector is Higgs. And similarly, U1 gauge field in the lead to spin charge separation is also Higgs. So in a type 2 cluster model insulator, type 1 cluster model insulator, the electron density, electron number on the down triangle are strongly fluctuating, but the electron density on the up triangle are fixed. So that means the charge boson on the down triangle are condensed, but the charge boson on up triangle is not condensed. So because the charge boson is condensed, the U1 charge gauge field is Higgs, but the U1 spin-on gauge field is not fixed, it's not Higgs, it's deconfined because of the presence of spin-on Fermi surface. Similarly, on the type 1 down cluster model insulator. In type 2 cluster model insulator, the both up and down triangle electron density is fixed to be 1. So then the boson, the charge boson, none of the charge, either charge boson is not condensed, none of them is condensed. But the U1 gauge field that causes spin charge separation is still deconfined because of the presence of spin-on Fermi surface. So what's the property in the type 2 cluster model insulator? So in fact, the quantum dipole model on a honeycomb lattice has been simulated by Ludwig Mosner, Sondi, and Chandra like more than 10 years ago. So I couldn't find a photo of her. They look at a very generic, a very general quantum dipole model. Besides the dipole resonance term on the hexagon, they also include a potential energy term for the dipole covering. So our problem corresponding to V equal to 0, where there is no potential energy term. So this is the first diagram. So our model will be here. So that means our model should develop this kind of plaquette dimer pattern. So this plaquette dimer ordering means the dimers are preferred to resonating on this bored hexagon, preferred to break translational symmetry instead of on the thin gray hexagons. So if I translate this dimer language into my electron language, so that would be the charge occupation configuration in this plaquette charge ordered phase, or in type 2 cluster model insulator. So in this phase, the translational symmetry is broken, and the three electrons are preferentially resonating on this hexagon, which has a circle in it. And it's either this configuration or that configuration. In fact, it should be thought as a linear superposition of these two configurations. I mean, it's hard to write linear superposition with figures. So this is a quantum mechanical effect. That's not a classical result. It's a quantum mechanical effect. It's a linear superposition of these two. And it's this plaquette charge order. In a sense, it's a charge RVB. It's a resonant valence bond. But it's in a charge circuit, it's a local RVB, it's not global RVB. It's local in this cluster, in this hexagon. it's a local, you know, Anderson, Professor Anderson's RVB, but in the charge sector, not in the spin sector. So it's a collective behavior. It's a collective behavior of three electrons, three neighboring electrons on this hexagon. It's a local collective behavior. The electron motion always avoid each other, but they're doing some kind of this collective behavior together. Three electrons are doing this kind of dancing on this hexagon. So it's a quantum mechanical effect. So that's the charge circuit physics in the type 2 class model insulator.
Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah.
So how many ground states are there?
How many ground states?
Yeah, in this
model.
In this space, yeah.
In this space, well, we only have one. So our model would be this red dot. We don't have this V term. We don't have potential energy term.
Except for the degeneracy coming from symmetric breaking.
Yeah, that would
there's
be three.
There's only one ground state.
Yeah, if you count the spin symmetry breaking, that will be maybe three states.
Okay.
Because this one can be here or here. Right?
Oh, okay.
So that's three. That yeah. So that's the charge circuit physics. So so when I wonder how does the charge circuit influence this the spin circuit, as I said in the beginning, if the charge circuit develops some kind of structure, it will surely influence the spin in a non-trivial way. What's a non-trivial way in this spin sector? So I think a couple of weeks ago, Sid from UC Irvine gave a very nice talk about this Lipschitz-Mathers theorem, Oshikawa-Hastings theorem. So this theorem states that for a model inside with odd number of electrons per unit cell, it's either topological or gapless. Right? That's the statement of the theorem. So in a type 1 cluster model insert where there is no symmetry breaking, there is one electron in the Kagame unit cell. So that's a spin grid. So now we are in a type 2 cluster model insert. In a type 2 cluster model insert, the translational symmetry is broken and the unit cell is triple. So that this dashed black triangle is the new unit cell. So it contains three electrons. And the three electrons are doing this resonating thing inside this hexagon. You know, three is also odd number. So that means according to this theorem, it's a spin grid. In fact, we can look at how does the plaquette charge order influence the spin on band structure more precisely. So that's the Brillouin zoom of the type 1 cluster model is where there is no symmetry breaking. So with symmetry breaking, the Brillouin zone is reduced. Actually, only one third of the size of the bigger Brillouin zone of the type 1. So the dashed one is the type 2 cluster model inside unit cell. So if we look at the spin on band structure, so if there is no plaquette charge order, so if we there will be, because this Kagame lattice has three sub lattices, and there will be three spin on bands, and because of fractional filling, we can forget about up two band. We only focus on the lowest band. The lowest band is the partial field in the type 1 cluster model insulator. So if we fold the band structure onto the type 2 cluster model insulator Brillouin zone, we get this kind of band structure, and this is doubly degenerate. So now we introduce a plaquette charge order. So this doubly degenerate band structure will start to split, and then they open up a direct band gap. If I further increase the plaquette charge order, so the direct band gap become bigger and bigger, and eventually the lowest band will be completely filled. If you count the number of spin-ons, like two-thirds of the spin-on will completely fill the lowest band, and one-third of the spin-on will partially occupy the up two bands and form a spin-on Fermi surface. So that's the ground state property. So now, what's the implication for the spin sensibility from this band structure and the filling? So as I said, if we increase the temperature, if we add some finite temperature, so a fully filled band, this band is fully filled. A fully filled band is in active inertia to external magnetic field. It doesn't respond to external magnetic field. We can basically forget that this completely filled band and throw them away. Only look at the spin degrees of freedom on the partially filled band. So now they're exactly 1/3 of the total number of electrons in the up partially filled band. At finite temperature, this 1/3 of electron will contribute to the 1/3 spin sensibility, you know, 1/3 of the, you know, Curie constant at finite temperature, at a low temperature, at a low temperature. So that will explain why there is a 1/3 spin sensibility anomaly at low temperature. The Curie constant, you know, measures the number of active local moments. So the moments is only 1/3 of the total number of electrons here. On the other hand, the bandwidths of this partially filled band give you an understanding of, give you an estimate of the Curie rise temperature at low temperature. So the bandwidths measures give you an estimate of the Curie rise temperature. Without the Plaquette charge order, the bandwidth is large. This would be the bandwidth, effective bandwidth. Now, if we increase the Plaquette charge order, this band is completely filled. It doesn't, you know, it's inactive to the magnetic field. Only these bands are active. The band effective bandwidth measures the Curie rise temperature. So this gives us, tell us why this Curie rise temperature is very small at low temperature. So this is the understanding from spin-on band structure reconstruction when the Plaquette charge order is present. So we can also look at this spin sector differently from a different point of view. By the way, is there any questions?
Why the partially filled spin-on band why not give you the Fermi-Leibniz behavior?
Yeah, this is zero temperature limit. It will give you constant spin sensibility. Okay. Just like organics, at low temperature, at a zero temperature limit, we get a constant spin sensibility.
Yes.
But if we increase the temperature, so, then it's a crossover.
So you are in the high temperature limit.
Yeah. Okay. So another view is from the spin state reconstruction. So in each unit cell, there are three electrons. The three electrons, they're doing this collective dancing inside of this hexagon. So three electrons, if we, you know, from simple quantum mechanics, three electrons are, each of them is spin 1/2. From the spin composition rule, we can either become like a total spin 3/2 or spin two spin 1/2. So in order to have a spin 3/2, we need a very strong ferromagnetic interaction. So that's not going to be favored. So it doesn't really end here. We can just forget about this spin 3/2. So the only two possibilities are these two spin 1/2. And so that means there are 4 degrees of freedom here. So one spin 1/2 degrees of correspond real spin 1/2. Then which spin 1/2 is picked? That will correspond to a pseudo spin 1/2. So that's a non-magnetic moment. So that's the understanding from the spin state reconstruction within one unit cell. So within one unit cell, there is a spin 1/2 and a pseudo spin 1/2 moment on each bigger unit cell. Then these unit cells themselves are coupled in a, you know, these circles, these three electrons in each of these red circles, they are coupled in a way. So the effective model to describe the interaction is a Kugel-Komolsky model, because we have a pseudo spin 1/2 and a spin 1/2. One can actually write down the model, derive the model. And because three spin 1/2 electrons, they effectively behave like a one spin 1/2 local moment. So that will naturally explain why we have 1/3 spin sensibility anomaly in the low temperature. So that's the one more physical explanation in terms of spin state reconstruction. In fact, we can compute this Curie rise temperature, then the reduction of factor of 9 here. This reduction is due to reduce the probability of spin interaction. Because originally each spin can interact with its neighbors, but then after they form this superposition state, the probability to have this interaction is reduced. So I want to give a summary on this material.
Actually, before you go on, can you go on this slide? So you say this is another view.
Yeah.
And then this seems to be much simpler, right, than the you know, it's quite natural, right? So why did you need the first bar which was not very
comfortable? Yeah. So that's a good question. So this from this kind of view will give you a faculty Hamiltonian, but then it's hard to obtain the spin on band structure. So if one want to compare with neutron scattering, you know, in like the neutron scattering spin structure factor, one need to rely on spin on band structure and compute the thing.
But you're saying you want to take this model that you derived, mm-hmm. which is, but now it's a spin on Kauf model, right? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. I think the misunderstanding is so in the usual triangle lattice case, we have a Hubbard model. You know, in the intermediate region, we should use Hubbard model. In the strong coupling region, we should use Heisenberg model, using the local moment description. So here, if the electrons are strongly localized inside this hexagon, then we'd better using this local moment point of view, spin moment reconstruction point of view. But if the electrons are not that strongly localized, in a sense, in an intermediate regime, so then we'd better use a spin-on band structure picture.
Even though it's also, of course, it's a control, right? And experimental in principle, it's not like we have any strong hint that we should do that, right?
Yeah, experimentally, we don't have a sense what's the number of charge gap. We don't really know the charge gap. But both of you give me right prediction on the spin sensibility, right?
Experiment can't tell the difference between these spin one halves that are localized on those blackheads versus ones that are forming.
So experimentally, how do I tell this?
Just this particular experiment that you showed, just the one third.
Yeah.
That does not tell the difference between a spin a half that's localized on these blackheads versus. Is that it? So you're in your spin reconstruction picture?
Yeah.
Suppose I just said the effect of Hamiltonian was zero, I would still get the same sensibility.
Yeah. So, yeah, I suspect, you know, because this Kugel-Komorsky model, you know, one cannot solve this model. It's a very frustrating model. The ground state is likely to also be a spin liquid, and it's likely to be smoothly connected to the intermediate regime U1 spin liquid. But this thing cannot be solved. So, yeah, I mean, one can use partons, use slab fermions, doing some machinery calculation, but it's not, I mean, one shouldn't, you know, it's very hard to develop an intuition, as I said. Yeah.
In the neutron data, do they see the spin anti-spin aspect continue?
Yeah, let me come to this in a few slides. Yeah.
So, what about, coming back to Vinicius' question, what about the local probe measurements like NMR?
Yeah, so this will come next slide, sorry. Yeah, so let me summarize this simple picture. So the emergence of the plaquette charge order is the driving force for the one-third spin sensibility anomaly. And in fact, if I use the fancy language of PI, it's the short-range quantum entanglement that create this one-third spin sensibility anomaly. And the spin ground state is a U1 spin liquid spin on Fermi. So that's a long-range quantum entanglement. So that's the pattern of short-range entanglement, if you like. So that would be some kind of some schematic phase diagram. Because the plaquette charge order breaks translational symmetry, so there must be a finite temperature phase transition at some finite temperature. And it will finite temperature, then you get a different Curie-Weiss law. Actually, this is consistent with experiment. I mean, there is a finite, one should interpret this turning point as a finite temperature phase transition to destroy, this finite phase transition destroy the plaquette charge order, and you go back to the type 1 of behavior. And in fact, they measure heat capacity, magnetic heat capacity, there is a peak around 100 Kelvin, which is the turning point of this spin sensibility. So this coincides with this peak. But the peak, this heat capacity peak is very broad. It's probably due to charge disorder because there are so many lithium here. Lithium is very mobile, create a charge disorder. So the first transition is I expect it to be a first order finite temperature first transition.
Why is it first order?
Because it's a tripling of units. So if you write down a Landau theory in terms of order parameter, there will be a phi cubed term.
But it's in 2D.
No, this is 2D, but it breaks a discrete translational symmetry. It's not a continuous symmetry breaking, it's discrete Lattice symmetry. Right? It's not a continuous symmetry, so there should be a finite temperature phase transition. It's not clear?
Yeah, I understand that,
yeah.
But what's the order parameter symmetry?
The other parameter is the charge density wave. If you, I mean, this packet, the charge order is...
Three equivalent, symmetry equivalent discrete states, right?
Yeah.
So
it's just electron density.
Yeah, so
yeah.
What's the order parameter? Like, is that three theory, or is it like plots, a three-state plots type order parameter?
Yeah, it's like that, but there is a phi cube term in the theory because
right.
of tripling of unit cell. Usually, I mean, I write, I mean, in the coarse grain description, I write that density in terms of, you know, phi times e I, some q times r. Right? Is it clear? No. No. Yeah. Maybe we can talk after.
Well, it always can be first order. I'm just thinking that if it's plots in 2D, it could easily be second order.
Mm-hmm.
Because 3 states plots in 2D is second order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But,
well, I don't know about this.
There's a cubic invariant.
There is a cubic term.
Invariant in the three-state plots on two dimension, yet the transition is second order.
Mm-hmm. I see. I didn't know this fact, actually. Mm. It's nice to know. Thanks. Yeah, so prediction. So in the charge sector, we have this first order transition, okay? So what's the other prediction for the spin sector? So the ground state is expected by U1 spinning with a spin on Fermi. So we have this 2/3 heat capacity and chi constant at very low temperature because the QE-wise temperature is very small. So in order to see this, you need to go to very low temperature. Spectroscopically, on IMR, measure this 1 over T1T, you know, relaxed spin lattice relaxation time. So this thing is proportional to density of state. Because of the reduction of the spin on bandwidth, the effective density of state is enhanced at very low temperature. So that's why there is a big peak at the 1 over T1T measurement. And neutron scattering is not particularly conclusive because of a very poor resolution. So the experimentalist claim is a gapless spectrum, and it's consistent with the spin on Fermi surface picture. But it's very hard to obtain some structure from this current data.
You got the charge.
Yeah.
So what did you say about the peak, that it was because of disorder?
Yeah, so first transition would already imply a peak. But if there is a disorder, the peak is broadened by the charge impurity, by the charge disorder.
But how do you think this would affect the spin? Like if the spin field is so tight to the charge, this nice ordering of
In fact, that if you look at the spin sensibility data, actually there's some noise up here. There's some noise up here. I mean, I don't know. So I predict that this material is type 2 class model insulator. So where is the type 1 class model insulator? So in fact, this material, I mean, this molybdenum class model insulator is represent a big class of physical system, and the electron are, I mean, localized on some cluster. So this material, this lithium indium molybdenum oxide, there is no spin sensibility anomaly, and at very low temperature, the spin sensibility almost become a constant. At a very low temperature, there is a sharp peak as due to impurity. So that's actually compatible with this material being a type 1 class model insulator. But there is a very limited experiment. I can't tell you too much about this. So I have another 10 minutes. I think, so I will go quickly to on the theories of three-dimensional class model insulator. So before I go to this topic, is there any question? Oh, no, two-dimensional class model insulator.
Do you have a log correction to the t to the 2/3?
No, that's due to, you know, the self-energy of the spin-on is
right.
Omega 2/3.
But from an experimental prediction, right, I mean, t to the 2/3, if there's no log correction, could be exposed, right? The log t is going to screw up.
Yeah, if you measure CV over t, measure the gamma factor, then it's a divergence. But it's very hard to measure. In fact, even in the organics, which has a higher energy scale, 100 Kelvin spin exchange, it's very hard to see this T2 to the two-third behavior. So yeah, I'm not quite sure, whether this thing is easy to observe or not.
But this is different because you're in the low temperature regime. Once all the phonons are gone, they're below 2 Kelvin.
Mm-hmm.
This is a cleaner case than the organics.
Yeah. But, there is some, at a very low temperature, the nuclear spin kicks in. So nuclear spin will, when you get a Shockley anomaly, will pollute your data. So at a very low temperature. Yeah, this is always an issue. Why, similarly in quantum spin ice, which would require very, very low temperature to see the quantum mechanics. But at very, very low temperatures, other effects kicks in, messed up with the data. So I expect the similar things will happen here. At a very low temperature, for instance, the nuclear spin, Shockley anomaly will appear in the heat capacity data and will cover up this kind of intrinsic behavior of quantum spin liquids, for instance.
If there's no, if it's a spin liquid, there's no mean amplifying fraction. So how do you get the nuclear shock anomaly when you are in a spin liquid?
Well, nuclear spin is a degrees of freedom. So if you measure heat capacity, they will always contribute to your, unless you have a way to subtract the contribution properly. Otherwise, it's very hard to do it. So let me slightly explain some more motivation about three-dimensional cluster model insulator. So there is an intense theoretical and experimental activity in quantum spin ice and classical spin ice. I think Professor Michel Gingras is an expert on both fields. So there are lots of material, actually. So last year, when I was working on symmetry enriched quantum spin ice, so we know that this particle material system is a F electron. So the exchange interaction energy scale is very low. So in order to see the intrinsic quantum mechanical behavior of quantum spin ice, we need to go to very, very low temperatures. And as I said earlier, at a very low temperature, many other effects kicks in and make the data very difficult. So is there any other alternatives? So there are two alternatives, question one can ask here, or motivation. So can we use other degrees of freedom to reveal the quantum spin ice physics? So as we condensed matter physicists view, in our condensed matter physicists view, electron is a combination of spin, charge, and orbitals. So if we use a spin degrees of freedom, we get a quantum spin ice. That's the most famous case. In fact, the quantum spin ice is a combination of spin and orbital because of spin orbital coupling in F electrons. So the most famous example is quantum spin ice, use the spin degrees of freedom. So if we use the charge degrees of freedom, we will get a quantum charge ice. So this is the rest of my talk. So if we use orbital degrees of freedom, we get a quantum orbital ice. It's an unpublished work of mine. Quantum charge ice?
Yeah, because the protons can tunnel on different positions. I think there are some papers claim that.
There's some paper claim that. Okay.
The water ice,
quantum
charge ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the charge are interacting with a much higher energy scale than the F electron spin. So presumably one can observe this physics at a relatively higher temperature. So there is another very non-trivial question in my mind, I think. So is there any other physical observables that do not have a strong temperature constraint, but still in a quantum spin ice materials, but still manifest the intrinsic property of quantum spin ice? I think this question is very non-trivial, and this is work in progress. I can't tell you too much about it. So three-dimensional cluster models are a manifestation of quantum charge ice. So I consider this kind of extended Hubble model, which is similar, but preserve the inversion symmetry of the particle lattice. This is the particle lattice. It's called a shared tetrahedral. So in a large U limit, which only allow single occupancy or zero occupancy, so at one quarter filling, if the inter-side repulsive interaction is very strong, the electron will be localized in the tetrahedron. There will be two electrons in each tetrahedron. If I map this occupied side as a spin pointing out of the tetrahedron, and unoccupied side as a spin pointing into the center of the tetrahedron, this charge localization constraint will be mapped into a 2-in-2 out spin ice rule. So because the equivalent spin ice Hamiltonian, effective spin Hamiltonian, will support the quantum spin ice phase, that means the charge sector of the problem will support the quantum charge ice phase. And in other words, the charge sector is a Couronic charge liquid. It's a quantum charge liquid. So in this interesting phase, the low energy physics of the charge sector is described by emergent compact quantum electrodynamics in 3+1 dimension, and the charge excitation will carry 1/2 of the electron charge. So in fractional quantum Hall is the example of charge fractionalization. So this is another example of charge fractionalization. So the electron is fractionalized into two charge ions and one spin ions. And there are two U1 gauge fields here. One U1 gauge field in the charge sector, one U1 gauge field that causing spin charge separation, that both are deconfined. So not only this phase is interesting, the mode transition is also very interesting. In order to get the mode transition, we need to condense the fractionalized the charge ions at the critical point. And when the fractionalized charge ions are condensed, so both the U1 charge sector gauge field and the U1 gauge field that causing spin charge separation are also Higgs. So one can actually use in the real light X-ray scattering to probe the internal emergent U1 gauge field in the charge sector, because you know X-ray measures the electron density. So using so if we the inelastic X-ray scattering measures the electron density collision. So the density collision will have this kind of emergent gauge photon kind of spectrum in inelastic X-ray scattering. At high temperature, if we kill the quantum mechanics, one can obtain some classical charge ice. We can go to this similar pinch point, just like a classical spin ice have. So the mode transition is very interesting. The low energy effective field theory is described by two charge ions and one spin ions, minimally coupled to two U1 gauge field instead of just one U1 gauge field. So the dynamical scaling exponent for the charge sector is Z equal to 1. The dynamical scaling exponent for the spin on sector is Z equal to 3. They are very interesting. You know, there are two different crossovers controlled by charge sector and the spin on sector. And they lead to some interesting thermodynamics and transport phenomena. In fact, the real material is a semiconductor, actually. So the proximity of metallic phase is a semiconductor. So actually, semiconducting is very interesting. So in fact, if it is semiconductor, so there is some interesting possibility that both U1 charge sector gauge field and U1 spin-on sector gauge field, they can be both Higgs down to Z2 gauge field instead of just the continuous part. It can be Higgs in the motor incident phase. So the resulting cluster motor incident can be Z2 quantum charge liquid plus the Z2 quantum spin liquid in 3+1 dimension. So this is the interest one direction I'm pursuing right now. So I want to summarize the talk. So I proposed these two questions in the beginning of the talk. What if the charge fluctuation is very strong and it's in the most extreme case, the charge sector form a quantum charge liquid, which is the three-dimensional cluster model insert. The charge sector is a quantum charge ice or Couronic, charge liquid. So the other question is, what if the charge fluctuation leads to some structure in the charge sector? So that's the two-dimensional cluster model insert, which applied to this lithium zinc molybdenum oxide material and lead to some striking experimental consequence. To summarize, so I provide two specific examples about the physics of class model insulator. And there is an interesting interplay between a charge and a spin degrees of freedom in both two-dimensional and three-dimensional class model insulator. So class model insulator are new physical system that may host various emergent and exotic physics. Yeah, thanks for your time. And
so could you please go to the slide showing the molybdenum oxide? So can you show the specificity, sorry, the sensitivity data? Yeah, right, so this one. So I guess one of your motivation is to explain this one-third downturn behavior. So have you thought about more conventional explanation for this? I'm asking this because it seems to me that if there is such a state where you have those plaque order, charge order, then you necessarily break the transitional symmetry of the lattice. So I guess one mundane mechanism which has this symmetry breaking is that just imagine all those, so there is a trilateralization of those spin-on half spins. So there is no charge dilution involved. Presumably.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that, then you basically have weakly coupled spin on half triangles, right? So if you do a back of envelope pure wise nucleus theory, you get exactly the same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically determine that very well.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
So I guess my question would be how could you experimentally distinguish, let's say, mundane mechanism,
mm-hmm.
like what I just mentioned, which has symmetric breaking? And the mechanism you proposed here.
Yeah. So in fact, I was talking with Professor Bhaskaran a couple months ago when he was here. So he suggested to me nuclear quadrupole resonance can be a very sensitive probe of this charge sector behavior. So you know, NQR, nuclear quadrupole resonance, measures the electric field gradient. So when there is a plaqueta electron, you know, charge plaqueta order, so the local electric field gradient are modified. So there will be a signature in nuclear quadrupole resonance. And there's also, I mean, high resolution X-ray scattering may be a good probe for the charge sector physics. By the way, I think the proposal, this mundane proposal of this trimerization of the spin one half moment. In fact, I think there are, you know, this trimerization doesn't have to be form some kind of regular pattern. It can be any kind of trimerization pattern. There are infinite wells of, did you see? Maybe I can explain to you later.
Right, actually, the funny thing is, when you mentioned this effective KK Hamiltonian,
mm-hmm.
it looks exactly the same as the effective Hamiltonian for trimerized triangular lattice.
Mm-hmm.
So because for each triangle, it's been three halves.
Yeah, understand.
You have four degenerate states,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And you have the exact same symmetry,
yes,
as the states. Just
yes.
Plotted.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's right.
More questions.
So actually, I have a question about this Hamiltonian. So, what is pi?
Yeah, pi is the linear superposition of Tx and Tz. So it's more like a compass, 110-degree compass model. If I forget the spin sector, so that will be the 110-degree compass model. If I forget about this. So your
claim is that the ground state of this model is a U1 spin liquid.
The ground state of this model is not null, actually. This is in the strong coupling regime. When the charges are strongly localized, then I should have this kind of model. But the exact ground state of this model, I actually don't know. But
that,
this model is highly fluctuating.
But that would be your claim, that this is the ground state is U1 spin liquid.
It could be. So the system might be in the intermediate coupling regime. When you know you get a spin on Fermi surface, whether this strong coupling regime and weak intermediate coupling regime are smoothly connected or not, is a question. Right?
Any questions?
Yeah.
So does the gauge field in the charge sector and spin sector talk to each other, or
say it again?
The gauge field in charge sector and you're in your spin sector. Do they talk to each other?
Do they talk with each other?
Do they, like, for example, in your 2D case, in your 2D case, mm-hmm. you basically say you have this when it's bound crystal because there is no gapless matter field interacting with your one gauge field in charge sector, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are gapless matter field in the spin sector.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way of
It's a good question. Then there can be an indirect coupling. In fact, that's why I put a question mark. Actually, I put a question mark here. If there is no gapless spin-on field, the compact U-1 gauge field in two dimensions is always confining. It's a polycoupling result. So the question mark is here means because there is a gapless spin-on field that will indirectly couple to this U-1 charge gauge field. So it's not clear whether this thing should combining or not combining. So yes.
Okay, so if no further questions, let's thank
Yeah, thanks.